Welcome to the Drupal Easy Podcast number 12. I'm Andrew Riley, and I just recorded a podcast about zombie attacks. And today with us we have Mike Anello. How's it going, Mike?
It is going just swell. Got the iPhone 3.0 update, and I'm loving the
nerd.
Hey, you know, I'm sure you have it too.
No, actually,
Colin Kettle.
Yeah, no, I tried to buy it. My credit card got overdrafted or something. So I've been buying too much technology.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Price.
Yes,
with the overdrawn credit card.
I don't need a funny line. My credit card went over its limit or something. At least the one I have connected to iTunes.
So each week we go over five topics that we think you should know about in the Drupal or computer world, as it sometimes tends to be. So this week our first story is about Opera Unite. Now, I don't know much about this. I just kind of glanced over the blog article, but Ryan, you followed up a lot on Opera Unite, right?
Yes. Well, the most follow-up I've done at this point is I've watched their demo video. Basically, the idea is Opera is trying to turn around the model of web user, web server, web browser, the server client thing. They're taking their software and they're making the server and the browser the same install. So you pull down Opera Unite, which I think at this point is like a beta build of the Opera browser. You have to do something special with it. And then it lets you publish any content on your desktop computer, or probably even within your network, to the rest of the internet. And they have a URL, it's operaunite.com. So you would get something like ultimike.operaunite.com or Liberator or Andrew M. Riley, which is our Twitter names, by the way, at Opera Unite. And this actually fulfills a couple of interesting things that have been talked about by the DSO project, the Distributed Social Networking project. It makes your name the first part of the URL. So it is me at Opera Unite. That's pretty interesting. The other thing it does, you know, it serves all of your pictures up in a photo gallery. It serves all of your music up in a playlist. You can password protect certain things. You have a Facebook wall, which they implemented as a refrigerator with sticky notes. It's very interactive. The apps that they have released already are very graphical and very sort of pretty and user-friendly. And it's a web server you run inside your house.
Right. The problem I have with it is the fact that it's not taking the middleman out of the picture. Whereas with a typical website, you have a web host and all your content is up there. With Opera Unite, you're putting the web host basically on your computer. So number one little problem I have with it is it's going to stress your computer a little bit if you suddenly give that URL out to a bunch of people and they're hitting your, you know, Unite site. I'm not sure what the
buzzword is. For probably 99% of the people that use this, it's going to be their immediate circle. They're like 6 to 10 people that they talk to on a regular basis. Your grandma and, you know, your ex-girlfriend, because she's stalking.
But the other small problem I have with it is that because of the address space that you just mentioned, if it's ultimike.operaunite.com or whatever the URL is, that has to go through the Opera servers, a proxy server, I guess.
Well, this is my problem with everything that Opera does, is their phone web browser couldn't figure out how to get the security layer right. So they have your SSH connect to the Opera server, and then Opera connects securely. But the connection you have with Opera is not secure. Yeah. It's a commercial company versus an open source company. So everything they do has a little ad revenue attached to it, or a little proprietariness, or a little bit of this, but it's a cool idea.
Right.
And what I like is the idea of hosting your app on your machine. And if we take the ideas of DSO, which is if you were at DrupalCon, you saw Chris Messina talk about this a little bit, or if you go to, I think it's DSOproject.com, and I will check that in a second. The idea that social networks don't want to live in silos. You want to be the master of your information, and then you have a federated way of pushing activity around and messaging. So if I, let's say Last.fm. One problem with Last.fm right now is the only way to push Last.fm is to publish it to the Audio Scrobbler service. Well, what if I just want to push from my local network? Maybe just we're sitting inside of Andrew's office right now. Maybe I just want everyone inside the office to know what songs I'm listening to and not everyone in the world. There's no way to scope that message. But with something like XMPP, which is what they're talking about using for the activity streams, and there's actually some Drupal stuff around activity streams already being developed, I could push that activity just to exactly who I want with really fine-grained permissions, things like OAuth, to say, this person wants access to this information. Will you allow them? Yes. But I don't want them to see any of my audiobook listening knowledge. Or maybe I only want them to see my audiobooks and not my music.
You're giving them one key, not the master key.
Exactly.
The other issue with Opera Unite is, I believe, in their end-user agreement, they have some say as far as the type of content that you're serving.
Because you're always going through Opera.
Because you're going through their servers.
And you have to make them look good.
Yeah. So, I can see Opera Unite being useful for a percentage of, you know, people online.
Yeah.
Because it appears that's going to be very easy to set up, very pretty. You know, let's just say for my mom. You know, if my mom wants to share pictures and not have to worry about, you know, uploading to a server or, you know, getting a Mobile Me account for her Mac or whatever, if I were to say, you know, try this Opera Unite and just point to the pictures you want to share, that would be a lot easier. But I think for, you know, kind of a little more robust solutions or people who are paying attention to these end user agreements and the proxy server issues, I'm not sure this is the right solution.
Well, we trust Apple with a lot of our personal information with mobile.
Well, of course. I mean, it's Apple.
Well, but, you know, if Opera had a bit more of a sterling reputation, I'm not saying the reputation they have is bad. It's just not as good as some other companies.
Sure.
We may be more trusting, and this conversation could go differently if Opera had a better reputation. One thing that I think can be cool is come up with different applications for this kind of a service. Taking Opera out of the picture, let's say that this was built into something like the Apple TV or XBMC, which is an open source version of the very same thing. Boxy is a product based on XBMC. So let's say you download this XBMC, and now all the movies you took at home are not hosted on your desktop, because you're going to want to turn that off now and again. But your set-top box, probably going to stay on all the time, at least just enough so that it can go out and grab new listings from TV Guide or whatever it wants to do. So you could have it in some sort of like a wake on LAN type of a mode. Someone requests and says, hang on, we're spinning up my computer. As soon as it boots, it is able to, you know, now push this content out to you if you're in a hotel room. Oh, there's this file I wanted to get at home. I know it's somewhere on my home network. Or there's this video that I really have to watch Lost or my, you know, MLB, whatever, because, you know, you want it to do that, what's that thing called? Not TiVo, the other one. Slingbox, right? You want your Slingbox functionality. And then you also want to give that to the five people you care about most. Grandma, wife, your cousin, I don't know who else. And maybe the five people that you work with on a regular basis. You want to share some of that stuff with your project team. You'd be like, you know, I'll email it to you as soon as I get home. Or log into my site. Here's your one-time login link. Done. There's a lot of utility with you can host your own files.
That's true.
Well, I guess the answer for this one is only time will tell. We've got to see the execution, see when people start using it, and see what other type of hardware and applications really pick up on this.
Yeah.
For our next story, we have CCK3 and the multi-group module. For those of you that aren't familiar with CCK, that's the content construction kit that allows you to add various fields to the nodes in your Drupal installation. It's really handy. If you don't have it installed on your site, please go get it. Try it out. It's awesome. But please use CCK2. Now, the CCK3 is the new dev branch where they're trying out all their experimental new features and things like that. This is where the multi-group module comes in. It actually allows you to do something that really I've never seen happen in CCK before. You can stick multiple fields together in a group. Not just a field group like you used to be able to, but you can, like, when you go to click add another, it will add all of those together. So, for my example, I use recipes. you have your quantity, but then you also have your ingredient name. So you may say 3 cups of flour, and that could actually be 3 fields. It could be quantity, measurement, and ingredient. So you could then, using the multi-group module, stick all 3 of those together and have them so you can click add more, and all 3 will show up, and they'll all be associated within the system together.
So it's kind of like a meta module. Well, actually, no, it doesn't really describe it, but it takes 3, it associates them, so that if you create a new content type, instead of having to add, you know, the quantity, the measurement, and the ingredient, you can just add the one line of, you know, well, multi-group.
And I think, and you might have said this already, you know, that you can use the field as a multiple entry, will add a new row for each one. That's what I think is the really powerful thing. I can have multiple addresses or multiple latitude longitudes or multiple, you know, let's say that it's a phone number, but you need to say that it's a cell phone. You know.
Oh, okay. So again, if you can add a new phone type or phone widget, that phone widget is actually composed of maybe 3 text fields. For the U.S. area code prefix suffix.
This would really help contact records for users.
Sure.
This has been requested for a long time. It's awesome to see they're finally putting in. But here's the big surprise. Ryan and I were talking about this before the podcast. We thought it was for Drupal 7. No, it's in the Drupal 6 dev branch for CCK. So I wouldn't recommend using it at this point, but it's really interesting to see this coming out and adding functionality that people have been wanting at least since the 4 days.
So is this isn't taking advantage or isn't using any of the fields and core stuff?
No. This is Drupal 6 only now.
Oh, that's exciting then. So this is something that possibly we might see in the next few months.
I'm hoping. Yeah. I'm definitely hoping with all the seafood sites I do.
So this would basically just be another module. You turn it on, and then, you know, in your CCK field set on your modules page, you'll see the multi-group module. You enable that, and then somewhere in the UI, you can kind of associate multiple fields together.
Yeah, chain those fields together, so they're always associated together. So I definitely think that's going to be a powerful one coming up. And let's see, Mike, why don't you tell us about, what Development Seed's been doing lately. They have something called Open Atrium.
Yeah, they announced this really cool Drupal-based package called Open Atrium. And they're positioning it as an intranet package used by development groups and other inter-agency groups. And like most stuff with Development Seed, you know, it looks to be very polished, very slick. It includes, you know, out of the box, it's using their context and features modules, which we've talked about before. But out of the box, it has a blog, a wiki, a calendar, a case tracker, and a blog. And those are features you can turn on and off. But it looks to be, it's one download, you install it, you turn on the features you want, and boom, you're off and running on your intranet.
Well, I hear this is almost like Basecamp made out of Drupal.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be. And, you know, it's very, very pretty. You know, all of the wiki and the calendar and the stuff that I've looked into, you know, appears to be made with all the standard Drupal modules. It's just that DevSeed came along and, you know, leveraged the features module mainly, I believe, to kind of stick everything together, make it clickable, one click, turn everything on or off. And give it a nice interface.
Yeah.
So that a client can download it, turn it on, select their features, and probably within an hour or two, you know, have something usable for, you know, a working group.
Yeah. This is going to be really cool, at least on a personal level. You know, I use a Drupal wiki for doing some project organization stuff. And I've been on a project before where they used project module to keep track of bugs and issues as they were the third-party developers. And it seemed kind of kludgy to go from one to the other. And, you know, project modules getting better all the time. The guys that are developing that, you know, they've now got the version control API, and there's a version of project module, I think, that can hook into that. So you're starting to be able to abstract out not just CVS, but Subversion and Git and other cool features. So
woohoo,
hopefully we will start having, we'll, as Drupal developers, we'll be able to eat our own dog food and we won't just have project tracking on Drupal.org and APIs on Drupal.org, but we can start integrating all that stuff into project-based sites.
Yeah, OpenAtrium does have project spaces. It looks like they're using the project module as well as organic groups. Not sure of that, though. And there's also a notification system within it.
Yeah.
And I even think that there's like
a little Twitter.
Yeah, a local Twitter. I'm not even sure what the right word is for it, but
and
a Twitter within the group.
This is just in closed beta right now.
It is in closed beta. I think
if you tweet them, I think they'll send you some keys when it opens up.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm sure they'll make an announcement and we'll probably talk about it because it just looks absolutely, fantastic. And, I think it's something that, we'll probably use right out of the box for Drupal Easy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Projects we're working on.
Yeah, even for the podcast, we could do some cool stuff.
Yeah.
And don't forget, you can find all of these addresses and notes at drupaleasy.com/podcast. And next up, we have another small story, but it's kind of a big woohoo moment for people who develop modules or have looked under the hood of Drupal, is that the body and teasers now for your default nodes or your nodes are now standard Drupal 7 fields. Since the fields are now in core, there's no longer any special code for teasers or for body. That's really good news in my opinion.
Yeah, it was funny. I was watching the commits for Drupal core, Drupal 7, and when that commit came through, I mean, it for that to be done, and I think that was the Barry at Acquia who's kind of the lead behind that change touched a lot of different files in core.
It was
a little bit scary. But it's kind of nice to see. It's one of those things that no one's really going to notice unless you're a developer. But to kind of level the playing field for all fields is kind of a nice thing to see under the hood, because now everything's kind of treated equally and it'll make life a little bit easier for developers.
And I hope it makes views integration easier. I know it's not the hardest thing to hook in for the body as far as a developer would do, but now since it's a field, it's all the same code.
Yeah.
It's a really nice thing. A good way to put it is leveling the playing field. Hopefully a lot of the modules in Drupal 7 will take advantage of that, so then we don't have to worry about all that special code that you think you've gone in and changed something, and nope, it doesn't actually apply for that. And Ryan, you wanted to talk to us about how to build a Drupal site in 10 steps, is that right?
Yes, this was something I came across, I believe, on Drupal Planet, but it might have been on this guy's Twitter feed. It's someone who sort of does a lot of Drupal tutorial stuff, and it looks like he got asked by Adobe to write up a tutorial for Dreamweaver users about how to get set up with Drupal pretty quickly and easily. And it's nothing that you haven't heard before if you listen to this podcast, but if you're new to Drupal or you know someone who's new to Drupal, I might point them at this. I know there are also some articles similar on about.com that end up showing up on Drupal Planet every time they get updated. This one is nice. It's got screenshots. It's not too overwhelming, and it's not lacking in too much detail. It tells you about Acquia Drupal. It tells you about top-notch themes. It gives you a good sort of overview of what you've got to do to get a Drupal site going, basic requirements, finding modules, installing them, setting up permissions, playing with themes a little bit, and it explains some of the Drupal vocabulary words. So it's very introductory, and it should get you pretty far, and it might require multiple reads if you've never used Drupal before.
And I have two comments about this article. Number one, I love the fact that he talks about the backup and migrate module, which Ryan and I were just talking about yesterday as to how awesome and fantastic that module is and how it's become just a regular part of our process. But my one other comment about the article is it doesn't mention, well, let me back up a little bit. Most people who use Dreamweaver are not server-side programming guys. These are not people who are programming PHP, who are running a database server, running Apache normally. So, right off the bat, it says the requirements are for the development environment are PHP 5, MySQL or Postgres, and Apache. Now, for someone who's used to just working on their desktop and FTPing files somewhere, that's a significant hurdle. So I think it's probably would have been a good idea to mention Acquia's DAMP stack, which is basically a one-click download. It gets you your development environment as well as Drupal all in one. I think for someone who's coming from a Dreamweaver background, just starting, that's an incredibly easy way to get up and running in a few minutes and be able to see Drupal. And then, you know, you get that running, and then you can start basically with step two here. So that's really my only comment. I mean, it's a fantastic article, and there needs to be more articles like this to get more designers involved in the process, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your comment that starting with the Drupal stack would be a good point. But from what, you know, if I'm a do-it-yourself kind of guy, I'm going to go to drupal.org and look for a download link. And Acquia just doesn't show up there because they're, you know, a separate site.
Right.
So maybe if Acquia does some more SEO on download Drupal and get the stack installer to be link number two on Google, then that might be
that'd be a very interesting SEO project.
Yeah.
We don't want to be number one. We want to be number two.
Oh, if they're number one, all the better. I mean,
Yeah. I think politically that might raise some eyebrows.
And so now enough about the rest of the world. Let's talk about some of the Drupal Easy news we have.
Well, Ryan and I have been doing some stealth webinars, I guess is the best way to say it. We haven't been announcing them on the planet. We've only really been announcing them via our Twitter feed. We're, trying to figure out the best technology to use. We've done a couple with Feed API. I believe another one was with, what was the first one we did? I don't even remember at this point. But anyway, if you're interested in taking part in these webinars, they're free right now. They usually last an hour or two, and it's using a screen sharing technology. We've been trying out different ones. If you're interested, follow us on Twitter at DrupalEasy, all one word. The next one is going to be coming in the next week or two, and we will announce it on DrupalEasy when it is. If you'd like to see our smiling faces in person, you can join us in Orlando on Thursday, July 23rd for an all-day workshop at beautiful Lou Gardens.
Ooh.
Yes, it's very pretty out there. And we're going to be covering Views and CCK. The title of that workshop is Building Content-Rich Sites. And it's going to be Views and CCK and nothing else.
7.5 hours of awesomeness.
And then finally, if you listen to our last couple of podcasts, you'll know that we're giving some books away. Ryan has interviewed Emma Jane. And does she even have a last name? I'm not even sure.
Emma Jane Hogben.
Okay.
She wrote a book with Constantine Kafer, K-Kafer, as you like to say. They wrote a book called Front End Drupal.
Is it just me, but anytime I see K-Kafer's name, I think, oh no, K-K-K-Ken is coming to kill me. Is it just me from...
A Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, okay.
Oh, come on. It's like the greatest line ever.
It's been a while since I've watched that movie.
So anyway, we have two copies of Front End Drupal we're giving away, and we have a couple copies of Matt Butcher's, I believe it's called Using jQuery and JavaScript in Drupal, or Building Drupal Sites with jQuery and JavaScript. We have a couple copies of that to give away as well, and to win either one of those copies, either call our voicemail line at 321-441-3964. And tell us, why you think you should have a copy, or leave a comment.
A note to our international guests, if you don't spend the 2 cents a minute, you could just call PF Alliance. It's just not a very Drupal Easy friendly name. So, if you're calling from outside the US, you could call PF Alliance.
On Skype?
On Skype.
Okay, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So we do have, in the next few weeks, we will be doing some other podcast interviews with other Drupal book authors, and we will have plenty more books to give away. So by all means, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and, these books cost, I think, in a bookstore, $40-$50 US. So it's going to be worth it.
So we have our first listener voicemail, and this comes from Bevan from Civic Actions, and I believe he's down in New Zealand. So when he says NZ, for the English-speaking Americans out there, it's NZ.
My favorite band, ZZ Top.
Sure, trust me.
My name's Devin Rudge. You might know me through Civic Action's blog or other Drupal-related things. I'm calling from Christchurch, New Zealand, and I have a question for you. I heard on your last podcast that you guys do training with Feed API, and so I figure you probably know a fair bit about how to get Feed API to do what you want to do. So here's my problem. I blog on civicactions.com. I also blog occasionally on drupal.geek.nz, which is my own personal professional blog. And I pull in all of my blog posts from civicactions.com through to drupal.geek.nz using Feed API, and it works great. The problem, however, is that often I want to embed a video or put pictures in line in my blog post. When the blog post, when the node gets created by Feed API on drupal.geek.nz, it sets the input filter to be the site default input filter, which is pretty restrictive. So when the node gets created, the images and videos and other more advanced HTML gets stripped out of the version of the post on drupal.geek.nz. So I'm wondering if there's a way to change the default input format for a node type or with Feed API or something like that. By the way, I really like listening to your Drupal Easy podcasts. I find them quite entertaining and interesting. And keep it up. It's good stuff.
Bevan, I think that to get your Flash movies to move from one block to the other, you're going to want to use a module. I've made it my site of the pick of the week a couple podcasts back. It's called Better Formats, and it lets you set the text format, as they call it in Drupal 7, from each different content type or based on different user roles for the blog posts that you're going to be importing. I think that's going to help you out.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that out. So every week we choose a module, theme, or other Drupal-related thing that this week I'm going to be calling Modules of the Week. So for our modules this week, Mike, what's your module?
My pick of the week is Ubercart Views. This was just a little bit of a lifesaver, or more of a time saver, I should say. And it's just a really nice module, add-on module for Ubercart that provide some default views, and even more importantly, exposes the orders table and the cart table to views. So, fantastic. And my favorite thing about this module is the guy who wrote it, whose name is Mads, M-A-D-S. So he's an angry programmer.
And my module that I've chosen this week is the admin module, and it's by Young Han. And the rest of the Drupal 7 user or D7 UX team. And what they've done is they've created what will most likely be the administrative theme for Drupal 7, but it's back in Drupal 6, and they're trying out all their crazy experiments on it to see how it works. And I was impressed how well this module actually works in a beta, as a beta module. So give it a shot on your non-production site and see how it works out.
It looks to be that this module is being used in OpenAtrium. The screenshots are very similar, so it wouldn't surprise me if it's the same module.
Cool. And my module of the week is the Geo module. It's by Ali Mika up there in the Twin Cities. And I picked it because it's the only module with its own month. Right now they're having something called Geo June. There's a lot of development activity, some fundraising, and some social events happening up in the Twin Cities, all around the Geo module and trying to get better geocoding support in Drupal. And Geo is this very sort of base module that exposes a lot of APIs and data storage and processing around, you know, points on the globe. And then other modules hopefully will start hooking into it and having interesting displays, interesting inputs for this sort of API. Much like voting API doesn't do a whole lot when you just install it and you need 5-star or you need vote up down, that's what Geo module does.
And whatever you do, don't confuse it with the American Chevy cars that were manufactured in Mexico. Very different. And our site of the week this week is Zappos.com. Dries posted a blog post that the site is running on about that Zappos.com Drupal. And I looked into it, and it looks like a few other portions of the site are running it, like Zappos.com/shoes. Is that right, Mike?
Well, what they're doing, it looks like, is they are slowly rolling out Drupal. And they started with their about site. Looks like they have some other stuff underway. And Zappos.com, it's a great site to buy shoes. I can't remember the last time I bought shoes in a regular store. I've been buying at Zappos for a few years. And it's just nice to see a big e-commerce company. This might be the biggest one we've seen. Granted, it's not, the e-commerce is not Drupal-based yet.
But it's slowly moving towards it.
It appears to be that way. There's a great article. The link will be in the show notes about it. And just kind of fun to see.
And remember that if you want to see our show notes, you can go to DrupalEasy.com/podcast. If you want to submit your site as a site of the week, you can go to DrupalEasy.com/site of the week. Or if you just want to give us a call, that number is 321-441-3964. And so I'm Andrew Riley. This has been number 12 of the Drupal Easy Podcast. I want to say thanks to Mike and to Ryan.
See ya!